Keys to victory. How are the 49ers going to beat those Los Angeles Rams in week four? It's another primetime affair, Monday night football for the top spot in the division, right? This is important. This is important. This game, games count in September and October, just like they count in December and January. If you want to make the playoffs, you got to beat those teams in your division that you're going to be battling with for the top spot in your division. This is a big one for the 49ers on Monday Night Football. How are they going to beat those Los Angeles Rams and the latest injury report heading into week four? Coming up on this episode of Locked On 49ers.
You are Locked On 49ers, your daily San Francisco 49ers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On 49ers, Brian Peacock and Eric Crocker with you. Thanks for making us your first listen here on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Today's episode brought to you by Brightco Jewelry and Watch Insurance. Brightco brings you comprehensive, fast, and affordable jewelry insurance for as low as $5 per month. Check out your special offer for Locked On listeners and get covered in under 2 minutes at bright.co/lockedon. That's bright.co/lockedon. You know, Croc, before we get to the 49ers and start with their injury report, we're recording this right after Thursday Night Football, seeing the Cincinnati Bengals beat the Miami Dolphins. But, man, just a scary moment in the first half, seeing Tua go to the ground and seeing how clearly he had a pretty severe brain neck injury, seeing how his hands froze. And that's just like that is the symptom of having a brain injury. And I've been, unfortunately, around a couple of brain injuries. And I've seen that before, and that scared the crap out of me when I saw that. And you hate seeing that. So the first thing I just want to say is, you know, you're really hoping that it's not as serious as it looked for Tua Tagovailoa. There were reports during the game that he was, conscious, moving all of his extremities, which is really important there. But, you know, it really brings into, well, first of all, what it does is snap you into reality. Like, oh yeah, these are all human beings out here. And you know, that's a scary moment for the life of someone like that, and for their health more so than, you know, because you get so wrapped up in, you know, who you're owning on your fantasy football team. And these are human beings out there. And it gets a little bit scary when you see a moment like that. And clearly not only all the players on the field and all the coaches and the training staff and players on both teams and the players in the entire stadium. And even some of the broadcasters were, you know, a little bit affected by seeing that out on the field. And so, you know, wish the best in a speedy recovery, and hopefully Tua is okay and everything's going to be okay. And we don't really have any reports further than what we got during the game there on Thursday Night Football. Croc, do you have any experience with any major injuries like that on a football field?
No. I mean, I've gotten my bell rung, probably mild concussion and whatnot. I definitely had a mild concussion one time. I got elbowed during spring ball at Modesto Junior College right here. I fractured my orbital bone or something like that and had a concussion there. But
someone's elbow got through your Revo?
No. Well, first of all, I didn't wear a Revo. I wore the shut.
Oh, the Modesto shut. Okay. Junior College as well. I was going to say, maybe that's why you go shut over Revo, because someone got their elbow in there.
It was just like shorts and a t-shirt in the spring or something like that, and I got elbowed by Vince Andrews, man. He was like all muscle too, 5'9", probably 190 pounds, all muscle, super fast, and he just boom caught me with an elbow right here. It hurt. I had never been, well, yeah, I definitely got dinged up a couple times my freshman year of high school. So I have a couple of incidents with concussions here now, I guess, now that I think about it. But anyways, Tua. It was scary, and for me, it was scary because the first thing that I thought of was second impact syndrome. Like, that was the very first thing. And I tweeted that out as soon as it happened, and I got responses from a lot of people saying, well, what is that? Second impact syndrome? Like, please explain this. And even Cam Inman, he responded and was like, man, I just found out about that. I think his daughter had got dinged up. I think she had a concussion. She's waiting to get clear right now. So from my experience, what I understand of second impact syndrome, I learned this in college. We're talking about, you know, 10 plus years ago now. So I don't remember it word for word, but it was along the lines of if you get a concussion and you go back in the game, or you play again before being cleared and maybe you have like swelling of the brain, and you take another hit, and this hit doesn't even have to be severe, but you can have second impact syndrome, and a couple things can happen. One, you could die, and another thing that can happen is you are like severely disabled. So when you see Tua last week, and he gets slammed and his head hits the ground really hard, and he gets up and he's all drunk and wobbly and falls to a knee, gets back up, and he kind of looks like a zombie. And you're like, what the heck is going on with Tua? And then they let him play. And they're like, oh, it wasn't a concussion, his back was hurting. I'm like,
I've never seen anybody react like that to a back injury.
Never, ever, right? But he goes out there, he plays, and then boom, see him get hit this time. And then, you know, you talked about his fingers, they're locking up. And it wasn't even just a regular lockup. Like, okay, some people, their arms get stiff. His arms were going in reverse, the wrong way. Like, they were bending the... And I'm like, your fingers aren't supposed to bend like that? And it looked like some exorcism type stuff.
Yeah, it looked like Stranger Things or something with the way that his fingers were bending.
Wow, that's a perfect explanation, Stranger Things.
That's exactly... And the biggest part of that second impact syndrome, Croc, correct me if I'm wrong, is that it's easier to get hurt that second time. And then coming back on the short week, Thursday Night Football, after the concussion, that clearly something happened with his head... On Sunday, I mean, you got to point to the coaching staff, the training staff. You know, I mean, it's hard for the coaches if the medical staff clears them. You know, it's not that important for your quarterback to be out there to put him under that sort of you know, they got to fix the protocols if that's the case, because clearly he had a head injury. They're like, no, it's a back. And then to see this happen, it just can't happen. That kind of stuff can't happen on a Thursday short week. You know.
And the tough thing is, I know maybe people might blame the coaches or whatnot, but this is all on the medical staff, because coaches go off of what the medical staff tells them. So if you're Mike McDaniel, maybe you get a report and it says Tua's name on there. Oh, Tua's cleared to go, minor back injury. He'll be in there for treatment, et cetera. And that's what the coach goes off of.
Yeah.
Typically, the coach doesn't, you know, act like he knows more than the doctors.
Yeah, and so you got to protect the players from themselves. Yes, Tua, he's like, yeah, I can go, coach. I mean, how many times do you do that? You're hurt, you're injured. You're like, oh, yeah, I can go, coach. I'm all good. And it's like,
right.
You're all jacked up.
Right. So, scary moment again, the second impact syndrome. That was the first thing that popped in my head. And I'm like, man, I hope he's okay, because what I remember from second impact syndrome, it is not good.
No.
I just saw a report right before we started recording that said he was going to be flying back with the team, like he's likely to fly back with the team. So it sounds like he's probably okay.
Okay, that's good that they don't have to keep him for observation there in Cincinnati. So, okay, good news there so far on Tua, and hopefully that good news continues. But definitely a scary moment there in Cincinnati on Thursday Night Football. Speaking of injuries, the 49ers do have an injury report here for this week. You know, the injury report for that Thursday practice, they have an extra practice on Saturday now because they do have the Monday Night Football game. So they have an extra day for some of these players to get healthy, but the injury list is growing now for the 49ers. But one player that I highlighted on yesterday's show, back at practice for the first time this season, that is Daniel Brunskill, limited participant with his hamstring injury at practice. I wonder if they might be able to get Daniel Brunskill in there. Would he even play? Would he come in and start if he was cleared over one of those guys just because of the job he's done in the past on Aaron Donald? Because that was one of the keys to victory we talked about yesterday. I think it's one of the keys to victory today that we'll talk about a little bit later with that offensive line. But Daniel Brunskill potentially could come back at some point. Limited in practice. He's been out all season so far with a pretty nasty hamstring injury that sidelined him during the end of the preseason there.
It's almost like the Undertaker, right? How the Undertaker just pops up, you know, and then you hear that bell go off, and you got the Paul Bearer guy like, let's go. And so that's right now, that's Chris Kocurek. That's his name, right? Defensive line coach. Chris Kocurek's over there with the urn. Then you got Daniel Brunskill. Wait, I'm tripping. Who's the offensive?
Offensive line coach. Forrester. Forrester. Yeah, yeah.
Forrester. Okay, never mind. So it's Forrester. And yeah, he's over there with the urn. Then you got
as insane. The old WWF days, the professional wrestling, those characters were insane. But I think the most insane character was Paul Bearer. That weirdo.
Oh, man, he was comedy.
Oh, it's so funny. It's amazing.
Think about it, like, what was even the point of him?
Just be weirdo. Just like, do they even have managers anymore in wrestling? I don't know. There was actors, basically. They were crazy.
But I feel like when you're a kid, I mean, I don't know. Wrestling was like the best thing ever.
I loved it when I was a kid. Yeah, once you get old enough and realize this is fake and it's weird and they started wearing jorts, I wasn't into it as much. But the campiness and that kind of stuff, I was all about that when I was a kid.
Jorts. I mean, dude, that's jorts. That's Stone Cold Steve Austin with the jorts.
Yeah, I was out.
I got out with Stone Cold.
That was the very end, and especially like the John Cena era. It was like, no, I'm done here. I'm done.
Okay, so yeah, I didn't watch much of that, but I mean Goldberg and Stone, like, dude, the Rock, end.
Like that. Yeah.
So Goldberg, you were out with the Rock. You weren't.
I was like, yeah, he.
Oh my gosh, I don't know, dude.
It got too real, and it wasn't. First of all, I was too old. And then it got too real. It wasn't campy enough. Give me Paul Bearer and The Undertaker all day long. Give me Ultimate Warrior with the face paint and the whatever it was hanging off of his arms.
Peacock, we agree on a lot. I think this one we're going to have to disagree on, or agree to disagree. Because okay. The Rock, Stone Cold, like Goldberg, like I feel like that was like – and again, I
like Stone Cold. Like Stone Cold was cool, but it was also like that was the end. You know, beyond that, it was like, no.
Okay, yeah, so beyond that, I give you that.
So the rest of the injury report upcoming, we'll get to on today's program. But somebody out there has got to have some of those Photoshop video editing skills. I want to see the Daniel Brunskill sitting up out of the coffin, and maybe Chris Forster as Paul Bear. That might be a little too much, but Daniel Brunskill coming back, if he is actually active for this game. That would be a good one.
Just come back for this and then go back into hiding or whatever he's doing. You got to just come back for Aaron Donald. Why is he the Aaron Donald stopper? This reminds me of, gosh, what was the guy's name? Reuben Patterson against Kobe Bryant. And they were like, Reuben Patterson, like, he's the Kobe stopper. It was like, dude, there is no Kobe stopper. But for whatever reason, Reuben Patterson, like, I think that's who it was.
I don't even remember that there was a person named Reuben Patterson. I don't remember him at all.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he played for like Portland or something like that. But like, I think he was like the Kobe stopper, just a random person, and that's Daniel Brunskill.
I love it. All right, next, the rest of the injury report. An alarming couple of names on the injury report this week going into this game on Monday Night Football against the Los Angeles Rams, and of course, our keys to victory for Week 4 coming up next. Here's a lesson: you don't want to be that guy. You certainly don't want it to be splattered all over the internet. The guy who proposes to his girlfriend at the game, loses the ring on the pier in public with video, loses the ring. There's so many videos, by the way, you can find at bright.co/lockedon to see some of these hilarious and sometimes anxiety ridden videos of folks losing their precious jewelry. But you can prevent, if you're going to be going or doing some elaborate thing in public, maybe you can't prevent losing the ring, but you can prevent losing the cost of that ring, because you can get that jewelry or your watch or whatever it is that is valuable to you insured with Brightco. And yet, don't be that guy that splattered all over the internet. The folks at Brightco Jewelry Insurance make it easy and make sure you can get a replacement for full value of that ring, no matter if it's lost, stolen, or you just can't figure out what happened to it. Go to bright.co/lockedon. It's the fastest, easiest, and cheapest way to cover your butt with the best insurance in the business. bright.co/lockedon. All right, Croc, taking a look at the injury report here, a couple of defensive tackles. Last week, Eric Armstead was out, and this week it looks like not practicing again is Eric Armstead, and also his mate inside, Javon Kinlaw, with a knee injury popped up. He is not practicing to start the week here. At least he didn't practice on Thursday. There's some time for some of these folks to get back and get ready. But both starting defensive tackles not practicing this week, Croc, and Javon Kinlaw. Remember Week 1, he kind of showed up with an ankle injury. He got taped up mid-game. He's had the knee problem. It's been a chronic problem for him since before he was drafted back in his college days. And now creeping up again is that knee injury. Are you worried about Javon Kinlaw and the knee? And then when you pair the loss of one starting defensive tackle with the loss of the other starting defensive tackle, are you a little bit worried about the interior of the 49ers defensive line going into this one?
I think you have to be a little concerned with the health of Javon Kinlaw, right? I mean, just the lower body injuries, and he's dropped a lot of weight. You know, this is a guy that was 330 minimum, and next thing you know, I mean, he's under 290 now, or hovering around 290. So you would think that the, you know, less weight, less stress on his lower extremities, but still seems to kind of get banged up a little bit. I mean, he's been dealing with these lower body injuries or, you know, whatever is going on with him as long as he's been in the NFL. So I think that's tough. I feel like you have to be somewhat concerned.
We knew Trent Williams was going to be out for a while with his high ankle sprain. Tyrion Davis Price, running back, played one game so far this year in his rookie season. He's got a high ankle sprain. He's also not practicing. Tyler Croft with a knee injury from a couple weeks ago, not practicing. We knew about all of those. A couple of new names, though, on the injury report this week. Azeez Al-Shaair's got a knee, didn't practice Thursday. Ross Dwelly, a rib injury from last week, did not practice Thursday. And Danny Gray, out of nowhere, a hip injury. Rookie wide receiver Danny Gray, it's not like he's getting hit on game day. So I don't know if he hurt this on one of his couple snaps he took last week or if this is something that he hurt in practice. But Danny Gray now not practicing with a hip injury, which is a little bit worrisome because that was one of the things that we hoped we would see with this 49ers offense is start to incorporate a little bit of that speed. Maybe you get some plays going down the field.
I think a lot of people, once Trey Lance got hurt, I think they just kind of scratched Danny Gray just off the list. Like, it's almost like he doesn't exist. And we did see him take a shot downfield against the Seahawks. And again, that was a game where Trey Lance did start the game. Mm-hmm. But Jimmy Garoppolo threw the vertical pass and then, like, triple coverage. It's kind of weird. But, yeah, when did he get hurt? I don't know because he's not really playing. Did he even get an offensive snap against the Denver Broncos? I don't remember that.
I believe he did get some snaps but was not targeted. He was active at least, so I don't know where that hip injury happened for Danny Gray, but
yeah,
that one is unfortunate, and he probably wasn't going to get a lot of work anyway, so I'm sure he's somebody that we're going to see as inactive if he's banged up going into this week. So the Danny Gray experience is going to have to wait, I think, to later on in his rookie season, and maybe not at all with Jimmy Garoppolo in his rookie season. Croc,
we got hold on Danny Gray. And I don't want to be extreme or anything, because we've already seen more out of him than A.J. Jenkins. But remember, I was saying that. I was like, you know, is it going to be Mike Wallace or is it going to be A.J. Jenkins? And that was something that I talked about because of what I saw just from his college film and what it looked like to me. Like, I don't know which one he's going to be, but I could see both of those guys kind of in him. Now, he's already been more productive just in that one explosive play from preseason.
Yeah.
And he's had some long catches in training camp, but just in the sense of what his skill set and what he is right now, I was like, there's a lot that he needs to really work on. Now, he'll work on it, he'll be fine, and he'll be explosive, and then he'll be more Mike Wallace. But right now, it's kind of closer to the other guy.
Yeah, but it's pretty amazing he's already surpassed A.J. Jenkins because he's already got a usable skill. Just seeing him in that Seahawks game, it wasn't a completed pass or anything, but just seeing him run and seeing him, it's like, he's got that. He's gonna put pressure on defenses vertically. Like, he has that. He has legitimate speed. Now, you know, he's going to have to work on the rest of his route tree, work on his releases and all those things. And, you know, we'll see if he can come down with some of those passes. So, you know, tracking the ball and ball skills. There's a lot that goes into being a really good receiver, even a deep threat, than just being fast. Like, that's not
NFL. What did you think that they could just utilize him on crossing routes and – hit him on a cross or hit him on a deep over. And the fact that they're not finding different ways to utilize his speed at all, especially for a coach who can kind of scheme guys open. I mean, but how does he scheme guys open? It's not like, hey, man, you got to run this slant and, you know, do this and do that. Like, all you got to do is just run straight across the field on the crosser and run away from the defense. Right. Like, there was a throw, and I think this was when Jimmy Garoppolo one-hopped Brandon Ayuk. But it was versus man coverage. He literally ran from one side all the way to the other side of the field. It's like, you can't get Danny Gray to do that. He ran a 4-3 to where you just maybe get a little bit more separation if you hit him. Now, I'm not asking him to run a 10-yard stop route or curl route and create separation at the top of the route, because I don't think, you know, I think that's an area he needs to improve on. But he can run straight across the field. Like, you find some kind of way to utilize him.
Especially if, you know, Ayuk, and definitely not, you know, Juwan Jennings isn't that guy. He's going to run away from anybody. I think I've been a little bit more impressed with Ray McCloud than I thought with passes that are beyond 5 yards of the line of scrimmage, because that's all he seemed to do with Ben Roethlisberger in Pittsburgh. So I think he's got some playmaking ability a little bit down the field. But Danny Gray's got an extra gear with his speed, and so I would like to see him. They're just not going to put Danny Gray in for Ayuk to run a pass like that, even if that's not Ayuk's strength right now. Where we talked about that, how maybe he's lacking some separation we'd like to see down the field. And when you're the fifth wide receiver, he's just, you know, And then you're almost tipping your hand then, because you then all of a sudden you put him on the field for one play, and the defense is like, who's 86? Oh, yeah, that's that 4-3 guy. We probably better watch out because he's probably going to run a deep route.
Well, they might have seen it on the because usually you get like a printout and it's like, hey, this guy, you know, fast or whatever, just to like brief scouting report. But if the 49ers just haven't utilized him, he might not be in the opposing team's game plan. But there was one play where they lined up Juwan Jennings on the outside, which he's not really an outside receiver because he can't really threaten guys vertically with his speed. But they lined him up on the outside and just had him run straight. And it was a play where Brandon Ayuk ran that slot fade against Jonas Jr. Josie Jewell, whatever his name is.
Yeah, Josie Jewell, 47. How you give a guy 47? That looks so weird.
Yeah, it looks weird. But they had Juwan Jennings line up on the outside and just run straight. And, I mean, he didn't threaten the corner at all. But it's like, why wouldn't you put Danny Gray there? Now, come to find out, maybe he's had a hip injury, so maybe that's why he wasn't out there. But I just thought, if you're going to run a guy off or you're trying to clear some things out, even if you don't really want to utilize him and you want to set it up for somebody else, have him run straight, not Juwan Jennings.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you there. By the way, speaking of numbers, it looks weird seeing Josie Jewell with 47 on the Broncos, but how about the Chiefs right away giving somebody number 10? I think it's Isaiah Pacheco, the rookie.
Yeah, running back.
This wearing number 10. That's weird. Right away, you're like, okay, rookie, here's this guy that was a superstar player. Here you go, rookie. Here's number 10.
Yeah. Well, 49ers did that with Terrell Owens. It's like, all right, Terrell Owens, you're gone. All right, here, Robert Woods. What's his name?
Rashawn Woods. Well, he was a first round wide receiver. That's a little bit different. But even then, I think you have a little buffer.
Did you hear Joe Staley talk about the 49ers giving away 74?
No, I didn't. But that's another one.
He was like, he didn't care. But they did call him and say, hey, by the way, you know, if you see somebody out there with your number, we just don't have any more numbers available, so we got to give them 74. He's like, oh, all right. He said, not my number. I just wore it.
All right. More keys to victory coming up here. 49ers, Los Angeles Rams, Monday Night Football. How are the Niners going to win this football game next? I want to thank everybody for making Locked On 49ers your first listen here on the Locked On Podcast Network. For your second listen, make sure you are tuned in, subscribe to the Peacock and Williamson NFL show, daily NFL coverage. Myself and former NFL scout Matt Williamson coming at you every day. And of course, Locked On NFL Draft featuring one Eric Crocker talking about the draft, checking in on some NFL rookies as well every single day right here on the Locked On Podcast Network. If you had to pick a number one key to victory, if the 49ers do this one thing, Croc, they win on Monday night against the Rams.
Convert on third down.
That'd be nice. That'd be very nice. Like maybe just two. How about two? Double last week's output on third down.
Man. So I did hear I guess an interesting stat with the third downs. I mean, I guess their average yards to gain on third down was like 8 or 8.5 or something like that. And that's not good. Now, I guess we can pin that towards the run game. So now I guess let me back it up and say don't just convert on third downs. But can the 49ers, not even in the run game, can the 49ers pick up yards on first down? Right? Can they get 3 yards, 4 yards? And I think that has set them up to be more successful on third downs.
Yeah, I think we could reduce that even further, like be less predictable. We were talking about how the Dolphins under Mike McDaniel and how different his offenses looked than Kyle Shanahan's. Kyle Shanahan's top 5 team in the league on running the ball on first down. Mike McDaniel's offense with the Miami Dolphins is top 5 in the league passing the ball on first down. Like, you don't have to run the ball to get yards on first down. So maybe Kyle Shanahan needs to just flip that on its ear. You can eventually run the ball more because you get first downs, but you're actually throwing the ball on first downs a little bit more often, being less predictable. So maybe that's part of it. But even reducing it further, the offensive line, man, no Trent Williams. Colton McKivitt's in there. I know he's played well and specifically played well against the Rams in some big games. So even if you're okay there, we've got Aaron Donald going against a new interior that we have not seen. Last year it was Brunskill, it was Mack, it was Tomlinson. Now we've got the rookie Burfert. We've got the 30-year-old journeyman getting a chance to start. He's looked okay. There's just some up and downs for Brendel. Better than I thought he was going to be honest with you. And Aaron Banks, that's tough. And now you have no Trent Williams on top of it. Mike McGlinchey's been pretty bad, to be honest with you, in pass protection. And his thing was supposed to be running the ball. So The offensive line's got to come to play because you got to be able to run the ball. As we said, we need third and shorts instead of third and longs. And when it is third and long, you got to be able to protect Jimmy Garoppolo so he's not throwing it off his back foot, running out of the back of the end zone for a safety, and those types of things. So to me, the number one thing in this entire game is the offensive line, because it sets the tone for everything the 49ers are going to do on offense. You're gaining more yards on first down. You're running the ball better. You're in front of the sticks, third and shorts. You're protecting your quarterback when he does have to throw. It's going to be so important this week, especially against Aaron Donald and those Los Angeles Rams.
What are your expectations for Jimmy Garoppolo? I feel like it's almost like a foregone conclusion. Like, he will be better, right? I don't see a scenario where he just as bad as last week.
It can't really be worse than what we saw last week. That was really bad.
Worse look like for Jimmy G? No way he's worse.
Well, I guess he could have thrown more interceptions, I guess. Like, instead of missing some throws, maybe he gets sacked and fumbles. Maybe he throws a pick instead of, like, just throwing behind Debo on that one route. Here's one thing, actually, which is something I love from the game plan. I want to see more of, because teams are keying on Debo in the backfield as a runner. But Debo as a receiver, but out of the backfield, I love. They had the big play that could have been bigger, him coming out running a wheel route, him coming out running that Texas route, angle route, option route, whatever you want to call it, whatever it is that is called that he is running, getting him out of the backfield, but as a receiver, I think is a great changeup, more so than trying to run him on counters and run him into the teeth of the defense like we saw with Trey Lance. Like, let's not get Debo Samuel hurt too. If the running game with Debo has been figured out, teams are keying on it, you got to stop doing it. Or the changeup to me is throwing him the ball out of the backfield. We know Jimmy Garoppolo can get him the ball in those types of ways. One thing I've noticed too around the league, I saw it a lot tonight on Thursday Night Football with the Bengals and the Dolphins, because I really started paying attention to it just this week and at the end of last week after the 49ers game. The 49ers plays just take a long time. And even when they're running a quick game play, like a quick wide receiver screen, I feel like it takes the 49ers so much longer to snap the ball, get the ball over to their receiver and their playmaker. And you see these other teams, like you see Tua and you see the Dolphins, like whoop, immediately in the wide receiver's hands. He's got space. Nobody's on him yet. And he goes. I feel like everything is so condensed for the 49ers. Even when they're running something that's supposed to get a guy in space, they can't do that. Like, I want to see a little bit more tempo. I want to see things just moving quicker for the 49ers offense. Does it feel like things are too convoluted on Kyle Shanahan's offense right now?
I feel like it's always felt like that. You know, when I watch the 49ers, I feel like everything is just so congested with the way that they play, with their rhythm. I believe it was the Indianapolis Colts game 2021 season, where that was like the first time I saw the 49ers have more of a kind of a NASCAR or like up-tempo offense where they just got back on the ball. It wasn't right before the half. Wasn't the end of the game where it's like all of a sudden we got to go hurry up offense. It was just got a first down. All right, let's get on the ball and run another play. And I'm like, whoa. The crazy thing, I want to say maybe I talked about that on the podcast right before that game, and then they did it. And I was like, man, that's just something you just don't see them do. But I see other teams do it where, okay, we picked up 10 yards. All right, let's get on the ball, either run it or maybe they pass it, do some play action stuff, keep a team off balance. And you don't see that from the 49ers. So on top of everything just being so slow and methodical, there's also no catching a team off guard with just, we're going to go fast. It's going to simplify what they're doing. You don't see it. But yeah, super congested with everything. I watched, I believe it was Joe Burrow on the first drive. And he just threw, it was kind of spread out, had a tight end. The tight end ran a 5-yard stop. It was almost like everybody was running kind of stick routes or whatever it was. Threw it to the tight end. Tight end kind of cut up field, broke a couple tackles or whatever. But I was just like, gosh, wouldn't it be nice if the 49ers just said, hey,
just line up
in the slot, run a 5-yard stop. We're going to just kind of spread it out. We're going to, you know, hit you in between the zone. And you just cut up field and, you know, pick up a few yards and whatnot. I'm like, yeah, the 49ers, it's saying, Green 80! Green 80! Say, hut!
Yeah, nine people action. Are
then
motioning.
You got Jimmy dropping back, ready to throw to a linebacker. And it's like, well, let's keep him away from the linebackers for a second, all right? And can we just spread it out and run some 5-yard stops, some stick routes?
And even when they make the short passes or the screen passes, I feel like the defenders are always much closer to the 49ers receivers when they get the ball than with other teams. There's so much less that just looks easy, like where you're taking candy, where it's like, oh, here's a quick guy's open. I'm just going to get the ball out quick to this dude and a little bit of space. It almost never happens these days. And it maybe is because teams don't respect Jimmy being able to throw the ball deep, which goes back to that. And some of the things you pointed out this week on Croc Talk TV, or the 49ers morning show, excuse me. And I was watching the episode with you and Greg Pennelly and breaking down the quarterback film. And, you know, like there was the Debo one that Jimmy missed, and, you know, maybe the reads on the other side of the field. But then there's the Ayuk one too, with Ayuk on a linebacker, and you've got a free shot with a wide receiver on a linebacker. And
with no help.
With no help. Where's the disconnect here on just taking the easy stuff that's just there for you? Everything's got to be difficult. And you're looking away from these free plays. Is that because that's where the play is? Does Jimmy not even have the opportunity to do it? Or is it on Jimmy? Like, something's, there's a disconnect.
I think it can be on Kyle. I think Kyle can be in his head saying, hey, you know, because remember, Green Bay game, hey, ref, my guy's going to run this. He's going to get held right now. And
yeah.
Then, like, George Kittle got held, right? So it's like, Kyle knows everything. And look, Kyle, everyone says it. He is an offensive mastermind. I do believe it from a play standpoint. His run game schemes. Now, again, how much does McDaniel have to do it? I don't know. We'll never know. But Kyle Shanahan is good at what he does. And maybe he can be a little too good. You know, you say that sometimes when a kid is, like, really smart, then they overthink everything. And is he doing that? On the first drive of the Bengals game, one of the first few plays, Ja'Marr Chase just ran an 8-yard stop. It was just an 8-yard stop. They threw it to him. He caught the ball. And someone messaged me and said, gosh, does it feel like the 49ers just never run a curl route, like a stop route? Do the 49ers just not throw those? I'm like, nah, I think everything is got to put this linebacker in this bind, and we're going to go here to where it goes against his rules, and I know he's going to move here if I show this, and then we're going to hit it. And it's like, dude, yeah, you can have those plays, but can we have the kind of the normal stuff too?
Right, and even the safety from last week, and you see the route combination, and now when you look back and you realize, and hearing Kyle's comments about it, it was the Kittle coming out of the backfield trying to get that, not necessarily wide leak. It wasn't like where he falls down and fakes like he falls down and then sneaks out. But it's like, you know, the long developing Kittle trying to get him deep. And people are calling it a running back screen. The running back, you can tell that's why it was a pick six after the safety. But because the running back's like not even expecting the ball, he's like running a half-ass route. He wasn't running a wheel or a screen. He was just kind of like running over there like, well, this play's not for me. And he didn't even try to go take the ball away from an outside linebacker. Defensive end shouldn't be out playing you for the football, right? And that's because running back, I think it was Jeff Wilson, wasn't expecting the football because he didn't even run like a real route either. So everything that's a big play is like, Kyle outthinking the defense. We're going to get him on this thing and we're going to scheme this leak open. It's going to be a fullback that's nobody's covering or tight end that nobody's covering.
I saw that too. And I said that on the show when I was on with Greg Pennelly, and I'm like, Greg, I think it might look like George Kittle's coming from this side and he's sneaking out. I was like, I think he's trying to get Kittle. But that doesn't make sense because it's so long of a developing play when you're on the 1-yard line. Like, that's the part.
Yeah, it's like it's a good call, but not right there. And that's what, because Kyle said that after the game. He said about the play with the safety. He said, that one's on me. We're trying for a shot play. Got a free runner. And I was like, shot play? It looked like a running back screen. And then you go back and look and like, yeah, they were trying to hit Kittle deep. That was the point of that play.
Yeah, just maybe not from the 1 or 2 yard line.
Yeah, so like I could see where there could be some gripes from Jimmy where he feels handcuffed in some ways. And you know how you remember back in the day when and look, Jimmy played bad, so this is not Jimmy excuse time. Jimmy played bad also, if that's also the problem, you know, it's one of the, it could be both. But do you remember Nick Mullins back when he was first starting to play with the 49ers? And he was like yelling at Kyle to shut up in his ear.
Because remember that?
Because Kyle, I think that's Kyle's thing. And that's probably where Jimmy's at is. So Kyle calls in the play. And then Kyle's like, okay, Jimmy, watch out for this. Look for this to happen. If they rotate into single high coverage, they're going to have this and you might have the throw. And so that's why I feel like Jimmy's like, okay, I'm not even going to look at Ayuk, who's on a linebacker, because my read is over here. And Kyle's telling me that I'm going to have this dig route. And by the way, if you're playing against the 49ers, you're just like, let's run robber coverages all day and try to pick off the dig route. Cause that's like, isn't they throw dig routes almost exclusively now. It's almost like kind of comical, right? I feel like every pass completion is a dig route. And then now they're running so many robber coverages at the 49ers because Jimmy's not good at picking them up, and they're not getting burnt when the safety comes out of that spot. And we saw it twice last week where Deebo goes uncovered, Ayuk goes uncovered or covered, but by a linebacker and burns them. And they're rotating away from those sides of the field with the robber because they're not worried about it. It's like,
so Greg told me that. Yeah, Greg told me typically you throw to or you look to the opposite side of the rolling down safety. So on the IU play, typically you would look to your right.
Which is now, what he does. Yeah, because he looks at the safeties and then goes away from that side.
Right. Now, my thing is, play, at some like, point, it's like, I got to know, though, well, if this safety's rolling down, well, I got IU on a linebacker. And that's got to. Now, they didn't show one. I will say that. It was one robber. They didn't show one. They did show cover four. But again, when you see at the snap, and these things, it doesn't take a lot of time to really process what's going on. When I'm out there at cornerback, right? I'm at cornerback and I'm looking at, okay, what do I see right here? I said, okay, got 2x2, and I'm reading the concept. And as soon as number two goes out right now, oh, I'm thinking dagger concept. Like, and it registers really quick. You can have a motion. Okay, I have this, I have that. Okay, then boom, snap of the ball. This guy flares out that way. Okay, I know one is coming in or doing something in, probably dagger concept, etc. Those things, it registers really quick. So if you are a quarterback, pre-snap, you look. Okay, they're giving me a cover four look. Oh, wait a minute. I remember this when I almost threw the pick on the first drive. And we went to the sideline. We, you know, take the little pictures. You look at the monitor. And it's like, well, looked like cover four. They rolled that safety down late. All right. And it was actually man, right? And almost threw the pick six, which should have been a pick six, right? If it wasn't knocked down the line of scrimmage. So later in the game, while they're giving me that same look, that cover four look, okay, they rolled down the safety last time. Which one guys are rolling safety? But if they are giving me a cover four look and there's one robber again, well, that means that there's one-on-one vertically with Brandon Ayuk. And so now you look. Boom, safety comes down. You look at the corner, he's flat-footed. I'm letting it rip. And it should process like that. And the only way it doesn't is if Kyle's telling him something completely different and he's just listening to Kyle. If that's what's happening, I'll give him a pass. I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah, I don't know either. And even on the plays that he's listening to Kyle, he's got to be better on those too because he's missing stuff. And yeah, and so maybe another week of practice. He's had a couple of practices under his belt now as QB1, getting in better rhythm, maybe getting in better shape. I mean,
can you tell Kyle to shut up? I mean, I know Nick Mullins did, but it's like, well, you're an undrafted guy, so you just tell him be quiet. But
well, and also he can't hear you. You can yell it, but it's not a two-way microphone. You just get
well. Whatever. Everybody knew though that Nick Mullins told him that.
Right.
Everybody knew Nick Mullins told him to shut up.
Yeah, but I guess and that's up to Jimmy too. If Jimmy doesn't want the extra bit, it's like, okay, you gave me the play, Kyle. Now stop. It's up to Jimmy to let him know.
Yeah. Maybe, I mean, that could come from, one, RG3 saying Kyle's a little controlling. Now, listen, guys, we are just trying to make sense of it. This is not us saying Kyle Shanahan isn't a great coach or great offensive mind and anything like that. We're just trying to make sense of what's going on right now. And I do remember RG3 saying, hey, he can be very controlling. Like, I played for the Shanahans, very controlling, et cetera. Kyle wants things done a very specific way. But – so maybe is it I just don't trust him. I don't trust Jimmy Garoppolo. But it's like, well, it's almost like your kids, right? Don't try this. But when our son D was 7 years old, we lived next door to his school, right? So our apartment complex was right next door. I was telling his mom, let him walk home. Like, let him walk home. I was at school. She was at school. I mean, I was at work at elementary school, another school. My wife was at work, so he could stay after school or whatever. But I was like, man, he walk home. Like, he's good. Right now, it's a lot of trust there, and you never know, people are weird out there, but you don't know until you know. So we let him do that. And now, what has that done? What the benefits of me doing that when he was 7 years old, which again, don't try that at home, and please don't call CPS on me. But now he flies on his own. Now he's 15 years old, but he flies on his own. He's good with connecting and looking at his flights. He's very independent. And I mean, I take the credit for that because I pushed for those things earlier. Oh, no, he could do that. No, have him just do this and then he just call us. Or, I instilled this certain level of confidence in him from when he was a really young kid that, hey, as long as you communicate, you do this, you do that, let us know what's going on, you can do it. And is Kyle doing that with Jimmy Garoppolo? Or is he micromanaging him to the point where Jimmy feels so, I just can't do this. And I feel so uncomfortable going off on my own in the real world. And now it's like, well, I'm not going to look at the robber safety because he's telling me to do this. Like, dude, at some point it's just like, okay, I understand what can happen or whatever, but all right, let me do my thing. I got the full picture here and let loose. And I don't think he's doing that. Who's to blame though?
I don't know.
Starts with the parents.
We will never know. Always blame the parents. Always blame the parents.
Don't call CPS on me, people, please.
It takes a village, though. It takes a village to raise a child. Croc, talked a lot about the offense. I think that's where the worries are. Worried at all about the 49ers defense? Is there any keys to victory for you on that side of the ball, aside from, you know, that interior different defensive line being banged up?
Matthew Stafford has thrown more interceptions than touchdowns this year. He's thrown 5 interceptions in 3 games. It's not ideal for them or their offense. They can't run the rock either. So I think a major key is, not ideal, major key, stop the run game that they're struggling with. Make them be one-dimensional, even though you think, oh, they want to throw the ball, Cooper Kupp, Matthew Stafford, all these guys. But the more times he throws, the more he's going to put the ball in harm's way. And we saw last time San Francisco primetime television, technically Santa Clara, but primetime television, Jimmy Ward, who won't be out there, but multiple interceptions, including the pick six, and they dug themselves in the hole that they could never get out of. So,
could the 49ers... And we saw what happened when the 49ers don't catch the ball when Matthew Stafford throws to him,
right
in the playoffs.
Well, picked off one, actually, Jimmy Ward, but then, yeah the other one. So he will give you opportunities. Okay, so I said all that to say, take advantage of the opportunities given to you. And that's been a big issue so far with the 49ers in their 2 losses. Did not take advantage of multiple opportunities against the Bears. Fumbling inside the 5, Deebo Samuel. Missing the tight end on a tight end leak play, Trey Lance. All right, those are 2 missed opportunities. Third down stops that weren't third down stops because you got face mask penalties. Missed opportunities. Last game, missed opportunities. You got guys running vertically against a linebacker and you just never even see it. It's not even in your read or whatever. That's a missed opportunity. You can't miss opportunities in this game. And the quarterback, Matthew Stafford, will give you opportunities. He will. Got to take advantage of it.
Got to take advantage. Thanks, everybody, for making Locked On 49ers your first listen. Croc and I will be live post-game after Monday night football, win or lose. So make sure you're subscribed up and tuned in and hit the bell so you're notified when we are live right here on Locked On 49ers. Talk to you then after week 4.